It's Mike Iaconelli. This is Bash U TV.
Here's what's awesome about Bash U TV.
You get the top instructors.
You will learn things at Bash U that you will learn nowhere else.
And we help you build confidence with new techniques.
We take the mystery and the myths out of bass fishing.
Real tools that help you catch more fish consistently.
At Bass U TV, shoes are optional.
And I like turtles.
We teach you to enjoy bass fishing.
And that's why you want to check out Bass U TV.
Join the Bass U family.
Welcome to Bass U TV.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Bass University TV Live, lunchtime edition. Appreciate you guys being with us today. Tell your friends, like us, share us. We've got prizes for you guys. We're going to tell you all about that kind of stuff. But we've been live on the water a number of times, and we've had a blast doing it. And our studio show typically runs in the evenings, but we decided to bring it to you guys at lunchtime. And we're real happy to have you guys with us, watching over here on Facebook and watching over on our site. We want to let you guys know, you guys watching us over on Facebook, get over to our site. The guys that we use their questions live on the air, we have got a ton of giant prizes to give away, and we'll tell you about what all those are real soon. But we've got my good friend sitting right next to me, GDP.
What's
Greg DePalma. How are you, buddy?
Good, man. Real good.
It is awesome. You're like a TV star now, dude.
Yeah, I try to be.
It was. I mean, you got hours, it seemed like, of coverage on the Thousand Islands, the St. Lawrence tournament.
I heard the same. I haven't seen none of it yet, so I'm very excited to watch it.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It was pretty. And using one of my favorite techniques, Carolina rig.
Yes.
Falling out of favor,
yes,
with a lot of anglers, but
it is.
I love it. I could see you were nailing them on it.
When you can just set the hook like that and then
big
round ones, dude. Oh, man, it's fun. It's fun.
That was so cool because everybody else has got their knees buckling. They're using 6-pound test spinning rods,
yep,
running.
Not me.
Not you.
Yeah, I actually, a lot you probably didn't say. I boat flipped a lot of them, you know, pretty good size ones. I was like, yeah, whatever, right in the boat.
Nice.
You know? Yeah, dude, it's the Carolina rig's pretty cool. Forgotten thing for sure.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that. A lot of you guys may have seen Greg with a strong top 12 finish up there at Thousand Islands. It was pretty awesome to see, going for largemouth on day two. And that's what our show's about, guys. We're fresh off an Oneida tournament. Of course, Greg fished on Thousand Islands. These lakes are multi-species lakes. We got them all over the country, from Texas to California. You guys are going to Ten Killer,
yes,
on the Elites. Also another largemouth, smallmouth place. We fished a lot of places over the years with spotted bass and largemouth. So we're talking about multi-species lakes. That's what our show's about. We've got some amazing guests on the show tonight. We've got Gray Buck, the winner of Lake Oneida tournament, where he actually caught a lot of bass, where I don't believe any bass really exist on Lake Oneida, but he managed to find a few. Congratulations to Gray. Can't wait to talk to him about that. And Dean Silvestri, a good friend of ours, friend of the Ike Live show and our show, and he's from Australia. He's really... taking it on. He's trying to become a professional angler. He's investing completely into it, coming over from across the pond, and had an amazing second place finish. If not for Gray, he would have won that tournament hands down, and had a great event. So we're going to be talking to both of those guys, and I'm looking forward to that. So stay with us for that. And we've got BTC and the Riz in the back. How are you guys?
Yo.
Outstanding. Here we are.
How you like the noontime slot?
Well, so far I like it.
Yeah.
Hopefully the people like it.
I hope so too.
We started on here. Time.
Hey, let us know. Let us know if this works for you guys, or you'd rather have us back in the evenings. We we like to do this at lunchtime. We know, and we'll span the lunch hours from the East Coast to Central Time Zones, and we might even make it out on the West Coast for a little while for you guys taking your lunch break. So take your lunch break with the Bass University, learn a little bit about fishing, have some fun.
Learn a lot.
Win some prizes.
Right.
Win some great prizes. So those that are watching us over on Facebook, like us, share us.
Yes.
And we're going to put you in a contest to win a real big prize.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it's a Megatron prize pack. Give me a second, because I'm so well prepared. It's noon.
I know. It's early. It's like 7 hours before we normally go on.
Yes.
Well, we've got tons of prizes. We got TH prizes, G-Juice, I see some missile jigs. I see the Ike Quotient tackle box.
Missile jigs.
I see
mini flips
right there.
Half ounce.
Yep.
I ain't getting away.
They're on our table. They're going out the door. They're going out the door.
Yeah. Exactly right they are.
Jig season, baby.
It's in my back pocket.
We got the troll jacket I see here. We got the G-Force handle. We've got tons of prizes that we're going to be giving away. So if
for the Facebook, we're giving away.
What are we giving away for that?
We're giving away a TH Marine Gen 2 cull system and a TH Marine G-Force handle valued at
$97. $97. Mm. And all you have to do for that is to like us, share us over on Facebook, and then come on over and you can win that prize. Then come on over and subscribe to Bass University TV, and then you can have a chance to win all these other prizes.
Bass U Live 19.
Use the code BASHULIVE19. It'll give you 30 days free. Mm-hmm. And we have a special back-to-school promotion going on right now. So if you guys are listening right now, go over and check it out at BASHU.TV. It's really the best deal that we've ever had over at Bash University. So go check it out for annual subscribers for your first year. It's 30% off. So check that out right now. Go over to BASHU.TV and subscribe. We got Gray Buck on the line, right?
We're going to go to Gray and two shakes of a lamb.
We're going to take a short break, guys. Get your questions together. Let us know what you want to talk about. But we're talking about largemouth and smallmouth patterns. Get your questions together for us. Greg DePalma in studio. We're going to be having a Bass U battle with Gray Buck and Greg DePalma.
And a Bass U battle of Pete and Dean.
Oh, that's
right. Dean versus Dean.
The Dean versus the Dean. So we're going to have a little fun. So bring your, we've got trivia questions from the great Ken Duke.
This is correct.
Of Fishing Tackle Retailer. So we got some great trivia questions. We're going to be giving away prizes for all that stuff too. So, we're going to take a quick break. Come on back. Stay with us. Come on over and go over to BassU.TV, get subscribed, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Hey everybody. Welcome back. Man, you got to love Gerald Swindle.
One of the best.
He cracks me up no matter what. He keeps you in stitches, spends more time in his comedy act sometimes than teaching us how to fish. So we love it.
That's a good point.
Did you guys see the video of him breaking his rod?
No.
Last week on the frog. He set the hook on a frog and some lily pads and leaned back on this thing so hard that his rod just exploded.
That's because he was taking all those growth hormones.
Yeah. That, what? Yeah.
It's a current show, guy. Pete. That's like live. It's like live where we talk shit and mix things up.
That's awesome. Well, I want to also let you guys know that our ticket window is open. We've got go over to thebassuniversity.com, and we have our early bird discounts going on right now for our live classroom stuff, guys. That's going to be happening in January, February, and March this year. So you can go over to The Bass University TV, thebassuniversity.com. I pulled an Ike there for a second. And you can check out all the classes. And we have more to come. So we're going to be all over the country this year. So look for more classes to be added very, very soon. But you let me know when we have Gray on. We're going to get him on up front and center. I know Gray has been gracious. He's pulled off the road. He's traveling. I imagine he might be heading down to Oklahoma. He's not going to Oklahoma. Where is he going?
Thousand Islands, I think. BFL.
He's going to BFL, where he has won before. And, so we're gonna get right to him. And I see him up there Skyping to us, looking sharp. I don't see the trophy, but maybe it's somewhere nearby. Oh, there it is. There it is.
There we go.
We got the champ, the classic qualifier, Gray Buck. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. I take that thing everywhere I go. I had a hockey game last night. I took it and showed all my buddies. It doesn't leave my side.
I don't blame you. It wouldn't leave my side for a long time either, man. That was is an amazing win. You've won on Lake Oneida before on the BFL level, and man, this is a pretty big deal. You beat out a lot of really tough competitors on a tough tournament week, and punched your ticket to the Classic.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy it all worked out that way. Back in October when they released that Oneida or the best open schedule, I saw Oneida for the last one there, and I knew I was doing them all because I wanted that shot at the Classic, and I feel like I have a chance to win every time I'm on Oneida. It's just, I got a little special connection there. I've spent a lot of time idling with those Lowrance grasses, staring at the screen, marking every single rock in there. I was telling you when I was in the other day.
Yeah.
I went up here in April, and before the grass started growing, I spent 9 hours the one day idling, just trying to get ready for this event. So to have it all that hard work just pay off, it couldn't be any better.
Did any of those rocks that you found in April, did they put fish in the boat for you this week?
I caught a couple of them. Yeah. It wasn't as big of a deal as I thought it was going to be. I ended up not fishing for largemouth at all, so I thought that was going to be a largemouth deal where I could maybe get one kicker flipping that grass with the rock under it.
Yeah.
But I like catching smallmouth too much. I can't put the rod down and go chase those fish. So.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it was great win, and that's what we're talking about here, guys. And bring your questions in about this. We're talking about largemouth, smallmouth lakes, and it's interesting because, you know, Oneida is known for being one with largemouth. And it's been on the multi-day tournaments. It happens quite often. Gets one with largemouth, and we're going to be talking about that today. How to adjust, how to decide to how to go back and forth and switch between the species. But you come right out of the gate. You said, "Man, I'm packing my bags on largemouth." Is that how it happened? How did you determine that? Man, I'm going after brownfish all week this week.
I just have a good connection with them up here. Those gobies have been in here for the last, I don't know, it's been 5-10 years. The last 5 years, it's been noticeable where those fish that used to be in that 3-pound range, it used to be like the solid fish. Now you're getting 3.5 and even 4 and 4.25. Like they're getting bigger and bigger. And I think smallies are just going to keep playing more and more on it. It's still not going to produce those 5-pounders like you can get flipping for one big largemouth, but yep. I'm comfortable. I feel like I can go out there and catch 17 pounds any day doing it. And I'm just going to keep fishing for them in the future.
Well, how do you feel about Greg DePalma sitting in your seat over here on the Bass University studio?
Yeah, I don't know. He looks pretty comfortable there. I guess it's all right for this time.
It's arguably Greg's seat because he was there. He was there a few times in the past year. So, you know.
Well, we could probably do a show just me and Gray. Maybe weave you out, Pete.
Yeah, woo, keep me out.
There's an idea.
After my performance on Lake Oneida, I think that might be the move. But
don't worry, I'm already on it, Greg. Greg, I got you guys.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't have my back, but that's cool.
I got your back, Pete. Way back.
How did your practice go? Talk to me about that, right? Because you had to have a little largemouth on the mind, as you said. And you eliminated that. Take us through your practice rounds and what led you to the eventual winning pattern.
Yeah, so I practiced for this one actually a little more than I normally would. I was helping Kurt up with his pro bass camp up there the week before the tournament. And so I got an extra 3 days than I normally would, and I had to come back for a wedding on Saturday. So I was driving back and forth between Pennsylvania and there. But we got on the week before with the kids down there throwing a chatterbait. There was a great bite going on with that, and they were catching, whatever, a lot of 3 and 4 pounders. And I was like, all right, well, I've never done that up there before. So I definitely mixing that into my practice week. I couldn't get it going when I got back on Sunday afternoon. And I tried even in the tournament after I caught like 17 pounds on day 2. I had that by 9 o'clock, so I was like, I'm just going to go try to catch a big one throwing that chatterbait. And I threw it for 3 hours and never even caught a little one. So the bites weren't a lot, like especially it was getting worse. Like that bass camp the week before, we were picking at them here and there. And then once the practice for the open started, I don't know if it was the pressure or what, but it was like one bite and then one bite. And I wouldn't hit them real hard. I kind of came back to those in the tournament to see what kind of quality was actually there. But it was fishing stingy for what a night it can be.
Sure. So that was the chatterbait bite. That kind of went south for you. Of course, Dean, and we'll talk to him about that, he was able to use that pattern to almost win this tournament, you know?
Yeah, I want to listen to that because, like, white and silver blades what we were catching him on before. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if he changed that up and he was going green pumpkin or the black blade or what, because I didn't mess around. I didn't tinker with it that much during the day of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's a little adjustment I could have made, but I was just kind of throwing what I had some confidence in at the time.
Yeah, stay tuned. I know that he did make an adjustment on color, okay. And color was key. He talked a little bit about it when he was on stage. But we'll talk to, you know, we'll talk to him and we'll find out a little more details there. So you're basically bailing on your chatterbait bite for those bigger smallmouth. What was your adjustment?
So I kind of figured out that those fish pushed up shallower from the BFL. They're in like 8 to 12 foot. The water had been like 83 degrees when we were here a month ago. and it was about 72 for the open itself. So it pushed them into like that 6 to 9 more so. And it seemed like they're, if you got up shallow in an area that didn't have the algae bloom going, there was some little shad just kind of flicking around and they're eating them. So I changed my cornerstone bait shimmy shot. I was still drop shotting for these fish on that rock line and where the grass kind of butted up with it, just like the BFL, just a little bit shallower. But I went to a ghost color. And I think that just mimicked those shad instead of the perch fry and gobies that I was targeting before. And I was able to get a lot of bites just in the tournament itself when I found those one areas like that in practice. And the other key was when they were eating those gobies in other areas where there's more rock with less grass in there, I was throwing the Hayabusa Brush Easy. It's a Ned Rig head.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 10th ounce. They just came out with it. It's a little bit heavier, so I was able to throw that in the wind. And it was hard to feel it on days 2 and 3 with how strong those winds were out of the east and west. But it was almost a matter of just dragging it kind of along. You wouldn't even feel the bite. You just reel up, and it was just heavy. But that you're throwing that Z-Man, that TRD on it, and just kind of picking at them here and there. But they were the goby eaters. Like, you would get them in the boat, you'd be going to put them in the live well, and they'd spit a goby off that was 3-4 inches long.
Right, right. And the rocks are key, right? That's where the gobies are hanging out.
Yeah, so I think the rock was the goby, so that was where I'd go Ned Rig, and then the drop shot was where the shad were meeting up with that grass line, and the rock kind of butted together.
That's it. What causes that? Is that like where the rock stops growing and there's soil? Is that what creates that grass line? Or
I think the grass just grows in that sand more so, yeah.
Okay.
But the smallies want to be close to that rock, too. Just they like eating those gobies. I think they're just kind of opportunistic with whatever's around them at the time.
Yeah.
But come October, I've been up here before where there's shatters everywhere up shallow. You go throw a jerk and you just snag them all, so I think that's getting closer and closer to being the deal coming up with that fall transition.
Well, I sense the move in shallow too. And you know, the ones that I did catch had made that move. And, you know, you did battle some heavy winds out there. I mean, on day two, my gosh, we had like 5-foot waves out there. It was, it must have been really hard for you to fish those real light baits.
Yeah. I had to go on day two. I caught them all on a drop shot that day. I had to go up to a 1/2 ounce just to be able to keep contact with the bottom.
Wow.
Like you said,
wow.
The area I was fishing, where I caught them the first day, they weren't there anymore, just getting pounded by wind. And then day two, I caught a 4 1/4 at the end of the day. So I was like, all right, that's a good spot. I caught a couple, like 2 1/2s with it. I was like, I'll hit that second. And I pull up there, and I was catching them in that probably closer to 6-foot range at the time when it was flat out on the day one. And I was fishing there, and I'm like, I should throw one that's out deep just to make sure they didn't push out with that wind hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
I threw out in probably like that 9-foot range. And I caught one, and I proceeded to make that cast for a 1/2 hour, and I had 17-something. Mm. And I left them biting. I was like all excited for it day 3. I was like, I'm going to go catch them there. Like, I thought it was going to be game on. I was like, I didn't expect anybody to catch 20 pounds of smallies on day 2 either, so I thought I was going to be leaving after it. So I kind of let up after there, but that guy, that was a monster bag of smallmouth for Oneida.
Oh, huge.
And it was impressive.
Yeah, it sure was impressive. But your weights were impressive and steady.
Consistency, man.
Yeah, and it's always a tough call, man, that, you know, my philosophy on fishing, like in derby situations, is I try always to worry about tomorrow. Like
I'm starting to learn that more and more.
If they're biting,
yep,
I'm catching them.
Yeah.
You know, because the wind's going to change. Guys are going to pull in. Locals are going to. You just never know what's going to happen the next day. And how do you feel about that, Greg?
Yeah, like I said, I'm starting to learn that more and more. The more that I fish, and especially the bigger level tournaments, like you're saying, there's so many more variables. So if you're in an area where you're getting them bites and you're catching them, I almost want to say day to day, wear them out a little bit. I really do, because I mean, it just changes too much not to.
Yeah, I mean, I've done, Gray, what you did. I've left them biting, and it's benefited me. And I've left them biting, and I'm like,
it's hurt.
Gone.
It's hurt.
I should have kept catching
it's
them.
It's hurt,
you know,
me more.
I could have caught 20 pounds maybe, but it certainly worked out for you. But did those fish, were they there for you on day 3?
No, they were gone. that wind changed out of the west that last day and it moved them. My thought on it was that I caught them the day 1 when it was flat out there. I caught them day 2 when it was blowing out of the east into there. I was like, there's got to be some, at least, like, if I need, like, one or two at the worst-case scenario, and there wasn't anything left there at that point. I should have just leaned on them and saw if I could have got up to, I don't know if I would ever got up to 18 pounds or not. I had 17-something that second day.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just all, I didn't catch a 4-pounder there. They were just all solid 3-pounders.
Yeah, that's a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
The wind up there is crazy. I noticed it at practice, too, is I've never seen something like that. It goes east, and then it goes west. And, I mean, it's like, it doesn't really rotate, like, or it's subtly. It's like,
it just turns.
It turns 180 degrees, man. Now, that had to be huge. I mean, you go to this area where you jacked them on the east wind, and now they're not there. How did you adjust to that west wind?
Yeah, so I actually didn't even start there on day three. I had that area I caught them the first day. I went back in there without the wind pounding it. I had to go check it. It's one of my favorite spots on the lake. And I jumped off like a 3.5 in the first 5 minutes. And it let me know at least there was some fish there. So I went, kind of fished it through for like an hour. And I had four keepers off of it. One that was like 3.25. So like one solid one.
Right.
And then I was like, all right, perfect. I'm going to go fill out my limit and get some big ones and spot two, and it just didn't happen. So I checked that first area probably 3 times throughout the day, and I culled twice going back there. And then I had a third spot that I guess I hit it on day two when my co-angler caught a couple there, and that's where I kind of did my damage on day three. I was able to get up to that 15 pounds, and with like an hour left, I thought I needed one more bite. I hooked like another 3.5. It might have been pushing 4. It was a good one, and I survived the first three jumps.
The fourth one,
he was gone, and I thought I blew my shot at the classic right then.
Wow. Oh man, that's that's devastating. That's your, and then you got to drive in with that last thing on your mind, thinking you gave this thing away. That must have been a tough ride.
Yeah, and then we have an hour drive to Bass Pro. So,
yeah, agonizing.
It was.
And did you know that you had it won once you talked to the other guys, or did you feel you had a shot, or how were you feeling once you got there to Bass Pro to weigh in?
I didn't know anything until I got to Bass Pro. When I pulled in, I talked to Jamie for like a split second, and he's like, yeah, I got 5, and that's all he told me. And then we got over to Bass Pro, and I was parked next to the guy leading there. I think his name was Cameron, and he... like, yeah, I got 3. He's like, so like, I knew I survived that, but I was like, I was pretty sure Jamie still had him. I was like, he catches them here every time too, and he was consistent with that 17 pounds each day.
Yeah,
and we started talking, and I was like, you gotta tell me. I was like, I have a shot at it. He was like kind of messing with me for a little bit, and then he finally let me know. Like, he pulled one out, and it was a little guy. So
yeah,
it was fun. I know Jamie from a while now, fishing these BFLs and all that, so we had a good time with it. It didn't sink in until like I finally got to hold the trophy up. Like, I didn't want to get my hopes up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And when Dean dropped his, you know, 17 pounds on the scale, that had to put the fear of God in you.
Yeah. I weigh all my fish, so I was like doing a lot of math really fast there, trying to figure out what I needed. So it definitely got me on edge.
that was great. That was a great win. Now, go back to the largemouth. I mean, when you bailed on him, you never even made a cast for him during the Derby?
The first day, I actually made one area. I went through some of that emergent grass that was up there. I just went and flipped it. I was like, I got it. It was dead flat. I was like, if they're going to be there, they're going to be here now.
Yeah.
I went through it, and I caught a 3-pounder that didn't help me. And it was towards the end of the day. I had like a half hour left. So after that, there was so much wind up there, I didn't even look at him again. It's not my style. I'd much rather you catch a smallmouth.
Right, right. So you eliminate the largemouth from really before you even start, man. You're going after the goby eating smallmouth, and you're going to try to win that way.
Yeah, and I would have spent more time in practice fishing for him if we would have had more sun, but we didn't get a whole lot of sun in practice. We had the cloudy weather. We had some wind, and they didn't put them on like the obvious spots that I thought they would be setting up. So with that being the case and just not being comfortable with it, I didn't think that was going to be my best bet.
Well, you know, and I know we've got some questions, and we're going to get to some of them for you right now, but you said something that I've got to, like you said, when the sun comes out, that's when you target largemouth on Lake Oneida. That's what I would. That makes no sense to me.
It does to me too. It does to me too. No, it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, if Gray's fishing the same stuff on the night that I fish, then fish get into that cover with that sun. I'm not sure if that's what he's fishing.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's the same stuff.
Yeah. Same stuff.
They're looking for shade. That's all they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know on a lot of the lakes that we fish, it's like when you get a cloudy day, that's the largemouth.
That's when they chew. Yeah.
Yeah, their strike zone gets big, but on Lake Oneida, it seems like those fish operate
backwards.
It's backwards.
Everything.
It's backwards day on Lake Oneida.
Write it down, Pete.
I'm writing it down right now. But
I'll take notes for it.
But Riz, what do you got for Gray? We got some questions. IM questions.
Yeah, we do. We got an IM question for Gray and you guys as well. And the question is, what are some of your key baits going to be now that we're moving into the fall transition?
At Lake Oneida, they're asking that for?
In general, Greg.
Okay, I'm going to start moving, throwing more moving baits now. Those fish should start feeding more aggressively. I'll throw a spinner bait a lot. That's one of my favorite ways to catch them during the fall, and you'll be able to get some top water going here on those nice flat days.
What about you, Greg?
My favorite, I would say, man, is probably a swim bait. You know, like either something in that 4-inch range, somewhere around there, just on a ball head, open up and, you know, target that bait and you'll find the fish. The swim bait for me is big this time of year on. Huge.
That's awesome. And you know, for me, it's more power baits in the same vein that you guys are talking about. But the crankbait starts to dominate a lot of what I do here in the fall transition. Matter of fact, I thought I was going to crush them on a crankbait on this Lake Oneida tournament. When the wind blew out of the east at practice, I could easily, in that same zone, that 6 to 9 foot zone.
Surprised you didn't, if it blew in the tournament, because that place, man, when it blows, they eat.
Exactly. And it blew east hard, just like it did at practice. But the areas and the pattern just did not hold up for me, and I couldn't get them to bite that crankbait. I think it might have been fishing pressure. I'm not too sure, but I will say this. The crankbait, you know, the bait starts ganging up. Mm-hmm. It starts coming out of the grass. You know, stuff like swim baits, spinner baits, and crankbaits are amazing tools in the fall transition. Who asked that question, Rich?
That was Adam, and Adam is going to win a DT6 and a bag of chigger bugs.
Yeah. Mm. How does he claim that prize? What does he have to do? Put his number
in? His customer number. Yep, guys. So anytime you you win something or you hear me use your question, go ahead and fire over your customer number. A lot of people just send in their customer number with the questions, but if you don't, you can send it over afterwards, and we'll make sure you get your prize.
Awesome.
I got a question for Gray.
Yeah. Oh.
Gray, what position do you play?
When I was playing for real, like in Penn State and all that, I played left wing. Men's league, I usually play center just so I can skate more and cover more ice.
All right. What's your number? What's your jersey number? Wait, hold on. Hold on. Hold on. First one to guess it on the IM board. Ah, shit. We don't know it. I'm guessing 16.
He can text it.
Yeah. We got no service down here. I'm sorry. Screw that contest. What is your number, Greg?
23 is what I have in
Jordan.
I was 46 growing up, though.
Okay.
Hockey University.
I'm sorry. I'm a hockey fan.
Yeah. You still got all your teeth?
Yeah, I wear a cage. I'm not getting hit in the face. It's not worth it when you're not getting paid to do it.
Yeah, right?
Right.
That's awesome.
We got another question from James, and this will be for the whole panel again as well. Where are some of the transition areas in the fall that you start to look for fish?
A lot of times they start pushing back into creeks. And when they're chasing the bait, kind of following that, just the shad that back in there. So that's one of the first places I'll look if it's like a reservoir sort of system.
Backs of creeks, classic fall pattern. You see those, that shad starting to really gang up. And, you know, I'll just chime in with the one, and it goes to my crankbait that I like to use this time of year a lot. But as that grass dies, they start pulling out of the grass. And what you find is like kind of like the areas get Gray was fishing. It's the rock immediately adjacent to the grass beds because that bait's getting flushed out of there with these early cold fronts. And man, it can be a point. It can be a gravel point, a rock. It can be a barge system like you fished up at Thousand Islands. But it can be any of that kind of hard habitat next to the grass. Man, that is where they're going to pile in, you know, September and October. certainly in this part of the country.
I love the fall, man. It's, dude, the cool thing about the fall is you can basically take spring and reverse it.
Yeah.
And that's how the transition is. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I like doing the secondary points and then work my way back to the creeks.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. It's just so much fun, the fall. It's the best.
I love the fall. You know what else is really cool about the fall? Is there's not as many boats on the water in fall.
That's true. It's my favorite part, man.
Yeah.
That's why I love hunters. Damn them trees, boys.
go watch the college football game and go hunting.
That's right.
Leave the lakes to us.
Love it.
And that's definitely that's one of my favorite parts. But it makes me crazy, you know, because a lot of people put their rod and reels down this time of year, and it's nuts. I know a lot of our guys over at Bass University, you know, they stay fishing throughout. And guys, this is a great time to learn
and big time.
If it's cold or, you know, the fishing's horrible or you're doing something else, this is the time to watch all the stuff on Bass University TV. We've got so much great content there that you can work on your strengths, work on your weaknesses. I think we're over like 500 instructional seminars right now over at Bass U. Matter of fact, we are filming live right now today down on Lake Chickamauga with Wesley Strader. And that's going to be available on Bass University TV come real soon. I know Lake Chick, the Chick is like on everybody's list of top lakes to go visit. So
it's on mine. I've never been there.
Yeah, it's got some giants. It's got a lot of double-digit questions.
I know it does.
Double-digit questions. Double-digit bass. As he's flashing me the question, you got more questions.
That's right.
What do you got?
Question from Dylan Smith. Will you fish an offshore fall pattern? If so, what kind of cover or structure are you targeting when fishing offshore?
Man, I do a lot of offshore in the fall. Contour for me is the biggest thing. Contour is the number one thing they're pushing all the bait against, and they're kind of ambushing them. I mean, I do it a lot, a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's my main deal. It could be a long point. Anything that they can push that bait against offshore is key in the fall. It doesn't have to be all the way back in a creek. It could be something that sticks out in a creek, you know, if they're working their way to the back. It's amazing. The best thing about fall fishing to me is once the fall weather sets in and it gets cold, a lot of the fish are doing the same thing. So you can follow the fish and learn from the fish this time of the year better than any time of the year, period.
That's a great observation. And what you said about the bait, I think, is key.
Yes.
And the bait is, you got to be around the bait in the fall. That's where the bass are going to be. And offshore, on the bank, wherever it may take you.
Mm-hmm.
But where that bait is, the depth that bait is at, is going to be key. I know, our boys from the New Jersey area are competing right now in Lake Sebago. And it's the Federation Divisional Tournament. And we won the Federation Divisional Tournament back in the 1800s.
Right.
And
sailed out.
We won it on on Lake Sebago. But here's the deal. We were fishing offshore. But the first thing we did was identify the thermocline. And the thermocline was where the depth that the bait was concentrating. And so whatever rock pile, point, any grass that we could find around that thermocline depth was where we caught all those fish. So the bait's really going to dictate it that time of year, especially. And fishing offshore is key. And I know you were fishing. You certainly weren't fishing the bank this week, Greg.
No. Most of that stuff's off the bank there. There's so much 6-foot to 9-foot range out there that you can just kind of fish either like the shoals, the points out of like the islands. There's a lot of area. So you can't cast it and hit the bank from basically anywhere. I was fishing this past week.
Where did you have any fishing pressure? Have you located some stuff that nobody messes with, or were you fishing around guys?
Yeah, the first day when I pulled into my area, there's two guys that were on kind of either side of me, and I kind of snuck my way in between them because I knew exactly where that rock pile was. And once I got lined up on it, I caught like 16 pounds off of them. They never caught one around me, and I pulled in there day two, and the one guy, I guess, that you watched me catch him this first day, he was sitting like on top of it, and I don't think he realized what exactly I was fishing there. And once I pulled in, he moved and got out of the way, but I never caught one there. And I don't know if it was just his boat presence on top of it kind of spooked him or not, but that area I caught the 17, it's like a little sneaky spot, and I never saw anybody on it. I've never seen anybody fish that little rock strip there.
I like it.
That's good stuff. And that's work to find those kind of places. It's time on the water, time on your raft. Yeah.
I bet you I've idled it there night for like 300 hours or more. I've spent so much time just staring at that grave. I looked up, actually, I had like 3,000 waypoints on my graph just from
wow.
Just every rock I see, I mark it for some reason, and I kind of bank it and try to run it at some point, and hopefully it works out.
That's amazing. I mean, that's got to clutter your screen, man. How you managing all those waypoints?
You got to know what you're looking at to be able to tell what it is.
I imagine so. We're going to go into the Bass U battle, or you got a question?
You nailed it, Pete. We're going to go into the Bass U battle. Okay. Get in there.
All right. We didn't do the Ken Duke trivia question. We were going to do that up front. I guess we'll do that after.
We'll double back on that. Yep.
Okay. I'm going over to find it. Because these questions, we spent a lot of time preparing all these.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm looking at these for the first time. Let's see what the Bass U battle is. We got GDP versus Gray Buck on the Bass U battle. What I'm going to do, I'm going to give you guys a set of conditions.
Drop the gloves.
And you guys are going to give me your plan of attack on how you would manage this set of conditions. And then I will tell you who's right and who's wrong.
I've been here before.
Yes, you have. You
multiple times.
Greg's a veteran.
This is probably like my sixth or seventh battle.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'm victorious, so you better watch out, Greg.
Yeah.
Battle tested.
Oh, man. I'm a little nervous now. my confidence booster, though, you know?
I wrote the questions.
Well, we got fall. We're in the fall training. We've been talking about that. A lot of questions coming through from our guys. You come across groups of busting bass, busting small bat way. they're busting small bait. I'm sorry. Way back under marina docks, you have to make super long and precise skips to get to them. What's your tool?
Well, who's first here?
Good. You're the veteran. Let's see how it goes.
All right. So I've been faced with this scenario quite a bit of times. So as far as skipping goes, I mean, am I casting into an area where I absolutely have to skip or I don't have to? Because the reason I'm asking, because there's one certain bait that I throw a lot around this.
Well, we're around marina docks.
Okay. So if we're around marina docks, man, I throw a Zara Spook a lot around marina docks. I'm getting ready to get a 10 killer, and I think that's going to be one of the bites. I really, truly do. I throw Zara Spooks because I think, number one, a Zara Spook has tremendous drawing power with fish that are either busting or not busting. A lot of the marinas that I've fished around can be in 50 and 60 feet of water, and I can pull them fish up with a Zara Spook on them bodies of water. And I learned one thing before. So if they aren't busting, I'll throw the same cast like five times, and I can't tell you how many times on the fifth cast I got him to draw up, and I got him. Pretty cool stuff. But a Zara Spook or a swim bait, they're the two, period.
What swim bait?
Usually a Riot Streaker, like an Owl Wife color. It's, you know, in that four-inch range, mm-hmm. Just on a quarter-inch head. I can skip that thing a mile if I got to skip it.
Okay.
So.
All right, we're going.
Exposed hook?
Yeah, exposed hook. Yep. Sorry, Gray.
We're making precise long casts with a spook, and that's how Greg's catching these fish that are busting, mixing in a swim bait. What say you, the champ? So,
that sort of situation, I'm going to take a spinning rod, and I'm going to put a fluke on it. I'm going to put a little nail weight in its belly so I can cast it a little bit further, but it won't affect its skipping ability. And what I'll be able to do with that is I can either, if they're busting out at the surface, I'll be able to work it fast and just keep it kind of twitching right across the surface and get a lot of those bites from the bigger fish there. Or if they stop, I'll actually sink it down just a tiny bit and just kind of work it right under the surface and try to get a lot of those fish to draw up to it. But a fluke is one of the best ways to mimic those shad out there when they're kind of getting chased around. And it just has such a unique darting action side to side. And if you kill it, it'll start gliding, looking like it's a dying one, and a lot of times you get bites when you do that.
Excellent. Going with the old school fluke.
Mm-hmm. And an old school
spook. And an old school spook.
Right.
I'm bringing all that Carolina rig spook.
Yeah. Yeah, right? He didn't say, like, Sammy or, you know, uh-huh. Skitter Pop.
Dude, that one knocker, that's a bad dude.
The big old spook.
Especially in the marinas, because it's like, it's so loud.
Yeah. So you're throwing a super spook.
Yeah, I'm talking about drawing power, man. I want them to see that thing. I want them to hear that. And if they're not busting, they're coming up to get it.
Okay. That's it. I love the old school. I love the old school perk. Both of you guys, really. The fluke.
Yeah, it's old school.
Is old school. Yeah. And
the only thing they could have said better would be...
Black Sanko?
That's right.
They were both great. They were both great answers. They were.
That would have been, survey says, the number one answer,
however. Yeah. Ding! Well, here's the deal, man. These are both great solutions to this problem and real effective at getting the job done. I love the drawing power of the spook. I think that's, you know, a tremendous deal. Mate, you can cast that a really long way.
Yes.
And in this instance, we needed long casts. We also needed accurate casts, which... the fluke, I think, gets a little bit more points for the accuracy and your skipping ability.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right? Because now you can take that fluke and Greg can get in between the boats, under the ropes. He can do some things with that that maybe a spook couldn't. I'm giving this one to the champ. Great buck. Wins this. All right. Wins this challenge.
2 weeks in a row.
Unstoppable.
We'll send you.
Sorry, Greg, we'll do it next time.
It's all right, buddy.
When we're hosting.
You're right.
We'll send you another trophy to carry around with you.
Oh, perfect.
I got to throw one thing in there. Don't forget, Pete, that I'm doing one against you and Dean.
That's right.
A challenge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Greg's the judge.
I'm the judge.
Oh, man. I forgot about
that. The Dean versus the Dean.
Is it too late to change my score?
No, you're done.
Greg dropped his phone.
Dropped it. Hang on.
He's back.
It was like that smallmouth he dropped six times in that event.
Mm. Oh, that was so painful.
I thought you just fell in, actually.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you say that because so many people think that winning tournaments, everything has to go perfect. And here you lost a giant right at the end and your momentum was too strong and you won that tournament anyway. It seems like when you're on that track to win derbies, I mean,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
You can forget to unhook your boat off your trailer. If you're going to go catch them, you're going to go catch them.
Yeah. And
who told you that? That might have happened day two.
The trailer?
Yeah, ask Schmidt about that on next time you guys have a lawn.
I said that because I've done that myself this summer. I forgot to unhook the boat on the trailer, but hey, it must be a thing. I'm going to start doing it more.
Yeah, I forgot to unhook the left strap in the back there, but I started to float it off, and it just did like a big circle. It was
oh man, one of them ones.
It was pretty ugly. I blame John Hunter. I was talking to him on the phone that morning and took my focus away.
Yeah,
dude, that's a terrible thing. You got like 12 guys behind you. You're almost leading the tournament. Now your boat's spinning around in circles with a strap. Yeah. Still can. What did you have to go swimming to get it undone? What'd you do?
No, so it actually happened at a different marina. I launched somewhere else that night, so I didn't have to deal with that traffic in the morning.
Okay.
But I just ended up troll motoring, getting it kind of straight back on the – I was able to, like, pick the troll motor up and get it back on there. Wow. And pull back out. But, like, when I came out, it was, like, sitting sideways. It was bad. It probably took us 10 minutes to get it back into the water finally.
We need some video of that.
Yeah. I did it down the flats with Freddie and Kay yelling at everybody in the parking lot while my truck sat at the ramp for 10 minutes. And everybody was standing at the picnic table watching it all happen. And then we caught 23 pounds.
So there you go. Right. Well, he won, you won. Good.
I'm leaving mine attached.
Yeah, right?
I'm bringing extra straps.
I just leave the whole trailer attached. Yeah. Just unhitch it and go.
Seriously, leave the boat on the trailer. You can't lose.
Pull a five alive.
All right. We got another battle for you guys. We're going to test you again.
Oh, man.
All right. Your first cooler nights are happening, and you're at a grassy reservoir in the southeast. Southeast, interesting. Small. What's a grassy reservoir in the southeast? Like Lake Murray, Gunnersville, that type of thing?
Yep.
Small bait is everywhere, and bass are on the move. What's the game plan for a flawless victory? Who went first last time?
I did.
Greg, you're the champ now. You can take it or you can defer.
I'll take it.
What do you got?
So I fished the situation last year down at Gunnersville for that Coast Championship, and there's a lot of that small bait flicking around in the eelgrass and milfoil beds down there, and a little bit of hydrilla with it. I took a spinner bait with smaller blades that kind of matched the size of the bait that was in there, and I was just burning it, just right down the edge. It comes through the grass perfect, like you don't have to worry about it. And what I was doing when I was working that was just giving it a lot of those pulses. Like I wouldn't just reel it. I was just shaking it, making it jump, really making those blades flash to look like the bait that was in the grass there. And those largemouth were just coming out and just crushing it. Like I even caught the last day of practice, I caught a 785. It was like the third biggest one I've ever caught at the time. Like wow. He came out of that eelgrass bed and just destroyed
it. Nice.
Damn it. Why couldn't that fish wait one more day?
I know.
That's a big fish. That's for sure.
I'm hoping I catch her next year when we go back there for the classic.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Are you moving to Gunnersville?
I'm just going to move in with Justin Lucas down there for a month.
Atta boy.
I'm sure you'll learn a lot. I don't know if he knows about
that yet. That's awesome. Well, that's a great solution. And it happened for you. Spinnerbait. Yeah. Small blades. Burn, erratic retrieve. What do you got, TDP?
Man, we've all been facing this scenario also. You know, like I said before, in the fall, even though them fish are feeding up for the wintertime or whatever they're doing, they still have been pressured the entire season. And that's why I think drawing power is a big deal this time of the year. I'm going to go with a buzzbait. A buzzbait to me, man, I can't express how many times I've went behind people that were fishing in front of me in grass, picked up a buzzbait, and absolutely crushed them because of the drawing power, plus the way it mimics all the bait really, really well.
Buzzbait?
Yes, sir.
Big buzzbait, small buzzbait?
It varies, you know. Mm-hmm. It depends on the situation mostly.
Clacking?
No clacker normally.
No?
Normally like that 3H range for a buzzbait size. It's either black or white normally. It's one of the two colors. Right. It's pretty simple.
Skirted?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
You guys are too young to be using all these old school tools.
No, that's the difference. We learned and we're actually using all the stuff you guys showed us. You know,
I know. Plus, nobody catches them on spinner baits anymore.
What? When did they ever go away?
What, spinner baits?
No, buzz baits.
Yeah. Buzz baits dipped out.
They did.
Yeah. Well, they had a resurgence with the frog.
Yes.
Right.
We did
recently.
Yeah. It's last few years.
Skipping docks on that stuff.
Yeah.
They did. They definitely, you don't see many guys on tour like that are live throwing buzzbaits, but now you're starting to see it again, especially with the major league. You're starting to see it because it's a great way to catch fish.
Yeah.
Drawing power, man.
Yeah.
Dude, that whole buzz frog, putting the frog on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Our buddy Brodzik, Stormtrooper, was doing something similar to that like 15 years ago with an 1/8 ounce buzzbait, taking the skirt off and going a little tube on there and then firing it on a spinning rod with braid.
Hmm.
And skipping that thing under docks into laydowns.
Ahead of his time.
Way ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, a long time. And it's the same 1/8 ounce buzzbait that Mike was using in the last MLF event.
Right. And he did. But that's, and the skirt, you know, nobody throws it with a skirt anymore.
What?
You know?
I do. I mean, throw a lot of skirt.
I mean, but I know I'm just being sarcastic, obviously, but you see everybody doing it with that plastic now.
Yeah, I think the trends in fishing follow. You know, you'll see it go. Everybody follows this way, and then it goes back to the normal again. It's like bow bottoms; they came back. You know.
Well, what's your choice? Like, when do you throw plastic versus a skirt?
I'm like 95% skirt.
Okay.
And when I do the plastic, it's on a reservoir. It seems like that's when I can normally catch them on that frog or a swim bait in the back. No skirt.
Interesting. Well, you guys both get major points for getting old school on me.
He loves
you
it.
Know?
Did you get extra points for bringing back your bell bottoms, Pete? You're clear to break them out.
I think he does get extra points.
He's
for
wearing
that.
Them now.
And and Gray gets extra points for letting us know that, you know, before he even told Justin that he's going to be crashing at his house for the classic. That's also bonus points. I love the spinnerbait bite, small blade. I love the burn because that's a big trigger. But we're talking about winning the tournament. I got to give the nod to the buzzbait, man. It wins in the fall a lot of times, and that's a close one. But I got to give that to GDP.
We got a tie.
We got a tie.
So, you know, Gray, I've done a lot of these battles. So far, I think both of our answers have been the best answers for, like, winning. Seriously. Yeah. I mean, they've been really good.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so. I think you're not to toot your own horn, but
that's I'm not. I'm just saying.
I'm GDP, bitches.
That's right. Just being honest like always.
But honestly, they're strong answers that are really effective, and I really like this kind of stuff because I think it helps our guys, especially guys that are watching, that get in this scenario, man, how you guys are able to quickly, you know, get some options, you know, where some guys can get lost. These are some great options to get started with.
I think me and Gray should do a buddy tournament together.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
We'll do good.
Tell me when.
Come on down.
Come on down. You can fish Lake Woodbury, where it was one last week with two fish for 1.7 pounds.
They weren't throwing a buzz bait.
They weren't throwing a buzz bait or a small bladed spinner bait. That's awesome. So you're going to go down, you're going to spend some time down at Gunnersville, you're going to prepare, you're going to graph, you're going to do that preliminary work.
Yeah, so I've been there two other times, like for a week at a time. I fished my first FLW tour event there, and it was like mid-February. So I got a little bit of experience that time of year. And the same thing, I went down there for 3 days and just graphed in as much as I could, kind of was getting familiar with it. And then last year in the Costa, I went, and I think I had 4 days of practice and then to get the two days of the tournament. Mm-hmm. But I ran actually north on that one. So I know how the lake sets up on both ends now. I'm just going to go try to finish exploring the rest of the lake that I haven't seen, and then I'll do a bunch of idling. I think I'm looking towards going down there in November. I would like to get there when the grass is still up a little bit, just so I know where those kind of like channels are in the grass and the ditches. Because last time I was there was December when I was doing a lot of scouting, and the grass had already gone down, like it died off a lot. And I had to do a lot more idling to see exactly how everything was setting up. So I think I'll just be able to get a better visual if I'm there in November.
Awesome. Well, I wish you all the best down there. Now, you know, qualifying for your first classic was a big deal. That's hard to do.
Huge.
A lot of people will never make the classic, and here you are going to it. And you know the best way to qualify for your second classic is to win your first classic.
Mm.
I like that idea.
you get the automatic berth. So
that would be special.
That's a good plan.
That's the way to go, man. Bypass the opens, bypass everything, just go win it.
Mm.
Yeah, that'd be pretty amazing. So. Yeah. So you're on the road. You're at your buddy's house now?
Yeah, I left my boat up here in New York on Saturday just so I didn't have to drag it back and forth. So I just hooked up, getting ready to go up to the Thousand Islands, go catch some giants.
Is that what you got, a BFL going on up there?
Yeah, we have one on Saturday, and then the top, I think 20% or whatever the field fishes on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
But it's going to be windy, so it's not looking like I'm going to be able to run out to the lake like I normally do. So I'm going to have to go figure out how to catch fish in the river, which I haven't done a whole lot of that yet.
Well, they live there. I mean, we've seen it this time of year, too. We've seen them big 26, 28-pound bags coming out, you know, from the river. It's going to be awesome. That place is just amazing with those giant smallmouth. We need to, like, get some of those over in the Lake Oneida. Maybe you could take some back.
They're growing. Those gobies are going to make them that big here in the next 5 years.
They will be.
Yep. I believe that when I see it.
Then we won't even have to worry about largemouth. You won't even be thinking about them, Pete.
Yeah, that would be nice. Maybe I can get my focus on smallmouth and actually catch a fish on Lake Oneida during the tournament. But we want to wish you great luck over there at Thousand Islands. Congratulations again. You know, man. So excited. I think the luck is whoever sits in this chair wins the tournament.
Oh, man.
All right.
So you're next. Right.
That'd be special.
Let's go.
Party on me.
Get him, Greg.
Yep. Going down to 10 killer. He's also going to be fishing the lake that has smallmouth and largemouth in it.
Yes.
So we'll see how that one goes.
Knock him up before his price goes up, Pete.
Will do. But in the meantime, travel safe. Congratulations again. Appreciate you being here in studio. Appreciate you being here right now. And we'll be watching the rest of the year.
All right. Thank you very much. And go catch them, Greg. I want to see you at the Classic, too.
Sounds good, man. Hopefully see you there.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
The champ. Great buck.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
Yep. See you guys.
What a deal.
Yeah, that was awesome.
What a deal. Great big win. Fished all season just so that he could get to Oneida. And
he did it, man.
Gosh, so many people try to do that on their local body of water and are unsuccessful because it's the hardest thing in the world to do is to win on your local body.
I think Gray won a BFL there this year also.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. And he's won another BFL there.
Yeah. Yeah, he puts his time in, man. There's no substitution for hard work.
He has figured out the recipe.
Yes.
And then put the work in.
Yep.
And found that over and over again. So, yeah, that was a good deal. So
real good. Great guy, too.
Yep. And he was here just a week before the tournament, sitting right in your seat.
On 1 week before mine, so.
Yeah. That's awesome. I want to see that down at 10 Killer.
That'd be cool.
Pete, throw out the trivia question. And then we're going to take a quick break, and we got Dean Sylvester. It's probably 2:30 in the morning in Australia.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's 3 o'clock actually. So yeah, we got to get the poor Dino. He's jet lagged and still waiting up the.
Yep.
Guys, by the way, if you want to be a part of the show on the message, head over to bashu.tv and get signed up. And that way you can interact with me directly on the message board. We'll use your questions on the show and send you some awesome prizes.
Yeah. Third segment here. We're going to get to the message board big time.
Awesome. All right. It's coming. And let's get to the Ken Duke trivia question.
Hit it.
I think we'll just call it that from now on.
It's always that.
He is the man.
He is the man.
Today, the authority on fishing records is the International Game Fish Association. They've kept saltwater records for generations. In 1978, they took over freshwater records. Prior to 1978, who kept the freshwater fishing records? That's the question.
You got any ideas? You're not allowed to answer it.
No.
I could read it.
Honestly, I can read it now, so I know. But I'll be honest, I would have never guessed this.
Me either.
I would have never guessed it, but it's an iconic. I'll give you a clue. It's an iconic brand in the fishing industry.
Huge,
been around forever. Obviously, been around since before 1978, and still around today. But have you ever met Ken?
No, never did.
He's
I know who he is.
Yeah, he runs a fishing tackle retailer, but he's just like a walking encyclopedia.
I know he is.
Of bass fishing, bass fishermen.
Yeah.
He knows your stats.
I'm sure he does.
You know?
Yeah, everybody's right.
Yeah, just
guru.
He's all over it. But we'll see who can come up with that. I don't know if you could Google that. I don't think you can.
I bet you could.
Oh, everything's Googleable.
Yeah.
Googleable. but that was let's talk a little bit while we wait for the answer, right? Are we going to take a break, let people answer?
We are. We're queuing up a quick piece here, a little commercial spot.
Okay.
And then we'll give the announce the winner and give the answer as soon as we get back.
Okay. We've got Dean Silvestri coming up. He's from Australia, you guys. Really,
Sylvester. Like the cat.
Like the cat. Sorry, my buddy. He's staying up. It's 2-3 o'clock in the morning over there, and he's going to be talking to us. He took second place at Oneida. He's got a really great story. For those of you that, you know, want to ever dreamed about taking a chance in the professional fishing world, Dean's right in the middle of his journey, coming from overseas, trying to make it, and just had an amazing finish. Almost won it, came so close. But he's staying up late so he can talk to us. He's going to be with us next. If you guys are watching us over on Facebook, like us, share us. We've got a $90 gift pack that we're going to be giving away to one of you guys. And come on over and sign up to bashu.tv. If you want to interact with us, ask us questions, win some of these prizes, and get the absolute best training in the world on the sport of bass fishing. It's all available over at bashu.tv. So come on over. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Dean Sylvester.
Bing. First, we have a winner.
We got already. A winner.
Yeah, already.
Wow.
We have a winner. The winner is Iroc Splinter with the answer of Field and Stream Magazine. Congratulations, Iroc. You win.
Is it Iroc?
It's spelled Iroc. E-R-O-C-K.
Oh,
Iroc.
Okay.
Splinter.
Oh, I thought Field he was making a reference to one of the cars I had when I was a kid.
Iroc.
Did you have an Iroc?
No, but I wanted to.
Get back in your Iroc.
I don't even know what that even is.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Wow. See you in a minute.
Hey, congratulations.
Head over to bassu.tv, the premier learning destination in bass fishing. Over 600 in-depth videos geared to help you catch more and bigger bass. Use the promo code BASSULIVE19 for 10 days free. That's BASSULIVE19 to get BASSU TV free for 10 days. Get the Bass University Advantage today.